And welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the DKP here at F4WOnline.com and WrestlingObserver.com. I am, of course, as always, your host, Alan, and I am joined here by an unwelcome guest, a annoying two-week-old cold. I'm also joined by the great Joey Bay, and I'm also joined by the son of a bitch who gave me this two-week-old cold since I met him for dinner 2 weeks ago and immediately became sick afterwards and have yet to been able to shake it. I'm only brought him onto the show today because I'm hoping by talking to him again it will like unravel the curse that he's given me or something like that, but it's Matt McEwen. Matt, how are you?
Apparently doing better than you, Alan, since I gave away the cold while I was in Ireland.
Joey, are you cold-free?
Yeah, I'm sweating up a storm over here, man.
Good. Glad to hear.
There's a heat gate going on over here.
That didn't take long.
Sorry.
I don't normally get colds during the summer. When the weather's warm, it's an odd phenomenon for me. I'm not used to in the middle of August battling something like this, but I guess that's what happens when you let these foreign invaders into your country like the likes of Matt. Carrying all kinds of rare Canadian diseases.
Oh, it's a stout cold. It can handle your strange weather over there, because if that's warm, you guys are screwed.
It was a particularly chilly night that we met up on two weeks ago, because I do remember thinking when you guys were sitting outside, it said you're sitting outside in the restaurant. I was like, oh, it's so cold. How are we going to sit outside? But then it was all very nicely well heated up out in the porch of the restaurant. But
it was nice. We recovered from the wind. We had some nice Irish pizza. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, you can't beat a bit of Irish pizza. Matt, tell everyone about your experience in Ireland. Did you did my country treat you well?
That was the best vacation I've ever had, to the point where in the middle of it, we were discussing going back for Christmas time.
Holy shit, really? That's high praise, because you're a man who has been around the world. You've seen it all.
I don't know if I've seen it all, but I've seen a fair bit, and Ireland's my favorite so far. Wow. People were friendly. Food was amazing. I'm from the Maritimes, so the weather was fine. If you're from somewhere nice, the weather would be miserable. But, you know, it rains, it gets sunny, it rains again, it gets sunny again. Things are fine.
And
little problem with the beer. The beer wasn't great.
Oh, really?
Got to admit that.
Wow, that's a real... I would imagine that a lot of people would stereotypically think that... that would be the best thing about Ireland, but you're saying everything else was great except that.
I think the only thing about me that's become incredibly Americanized is my taste for really, really citrusy hop beers. And I only found one that I could drink over there. Other than that, it was a bunch of light lagers and whatnot.
Interesting. Maybe that's how I maintain such a positive, a jovial outlook on life, because I don't drink our apparently shitty beer over here.
Oh, and white pudding for breakfast.
Good or bad?
Amazing.
Oh, I've always been put off going for the pudding during breakfast. I'm not a pudding guy. Pudding is a dessert you have at Christmas to me.
I was like testing the full Irish everywhere I went. So blood pudding was okay, but the white pudding was blowing me away. That was amazing.
I when I get a big breakfast like that, I go scrambled egg, beans, brown toast, mushrooms, sausages, maybe one rasher, and I'll only eat the eye. Because when it's a buffet, you can be picky with things like this. So, and what else? I'd usually go for some of the cold stuff as well, depending on how full I was. But those are the staples of my hot breakfast. I wouldn't be a man who'd go for the roasted tomato. That's just disgusting. Or the fried tomato. That's gross. You don't want.
Oh, that thing's gross.
That is just the worst thing in the world. Anyone who eats
lucky
the fried
for me,
tomatoes,
my wife really likes them. So Liz took all the fried tomatoes from me, and I just ate all the good stuff.
Yeah, I stay away from the fried tomato. I stay away from the black and white pudding. And I think just something else I stay away from. I can't. Oh, do you know what's always a treat whenever it pops up is the little potato cubes. I'm a big fan of them.
Mm-hmm. good. Those were good, yeah.
So when you say black and white pudding, is it chocolate pudding and vanilla pudding, or
no?
Is it,
no, like, no. It's like,
what is this?
It's weird meat. The black pudding is blood pudding, so it's like black because there's literal blood in it.
All right.
And I don't know what makes up the white pudding because I'd never seen it until I was in Ireland, but it was good.
Right on. I'll take your word for it. I was like, Joey, vanilla pudding for breakfast. Delightful.
Black pudding is a type of blood sausage commonly eaten in Great Britain, Ireland, and other parts of Europe. It is generally made from pork fat or beef suet, pork blood, and a relatively high proportion of oatmeal. Of oatmeal? What the fuck? That was a curveball right at the end that I wasn't expecting.
Is that for texture or what? Like, everything else you've described is just sounds terrible.
And then, oh, it's delicious.
White pudding is an white pudding or oatmeal pudding is a meat dish popular in Ireland. Blah, blah, blah. White pudding is similar to black pudding but does not include blood. It consists of pork, meat, and fat, suet, bread, oatmeal, formed into a large sausage. So, yeah, it's essentially the same, just without the blood.
I got gotcha.
It. It's bloody good.
Well, well, Matt's never steered me wrong with food before. He kind of coerced me or forced my hand into eating baby squid in Saitama once. So, I guess
I'd try it. And then you took all my baby squid, you bastard.
Yeah, they were good. I mean, you forced my hand initially. I wasn't going to eat any of them, so you had fair game to all of them. Because I don't think anybody else ate them that day, but yeah. you haven't steered me wrong before, Matt, so I'd stick with it. I'd try it out.
Joey, now, would you ever be a man to indulge in the full Irish breakfast or full English breakfast?
Based off of everything else that you described, yeah, I'd go for it. At least the eggs and the mushrooms.
And the bacon. The bacon,
yeah,
in
the
Ireland
bacon
is amazing.
Yeah. What's the big difference? Is it just thicker or more fatty or?
It's a completely different cut. It tastes like ham, but bacony.
Yeah, because you guys have that like kind of streaky kind of bacon. I don't like that because I don't like the like lines of fat going down the middle. I like the big eye of just pure meat. That's the that's why I like our rashers, as we call them over here.
Oh man, I said to Liz at one point, I couldn't understand why Canada has Canadian bacon and why there's not Irish bacon, because that was the best bacon I've ever had.
That's a good point, actually, because Canadian bacon's not. Like, as an American, that's not actually bacon. it's ham.
Yeah.
So
it's the same way in Canada. In Canada, we call it ham.
Okay. That's good to know. So if I'm ever ordering a Canadian bacon pizza up in Canada, it would just be a ham pizza.
And there'll be pineapple on it.
Oh, gosh, no. Never. Not for me.
This is your pointless trivia of the day. Hawaiian pizza created in Canada.
That's,
really?
That's ref. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't think tropical when I think Canada.
Nah, no, me neither.
No offense, Matt.
Not taken.
You're all lovely people, but you're not the most tropical. Lance Storm, not the most tropical person I've ever seen in my life. So, gentlemen, the reason why we're actually here is not to discuss bacon, black pudding, or Lance Storm, but to discuss the G1 climax. Yeah, what's your juice of choice? Now, there is the Robinson's option that we do have over here if you want to go with Robinson's instead of Kiora or instead of your... what's the other... I forget the name. My Wadi. Those are the three concentrated juices of choice over here. But I would say a pineapple juice or an apple juice would be my preferred choice at breakfast time.
Coffee and water.
Coffee and water. Oh. I like the juice first. It really opens up my taste buds, and then I can enjoy everything else. But... there is another juice, of course, and that is Juice Robinson. We'll be talking about him on this show here today, because we're going to talk G1 Climax, but at the outset I will explain that this is not going to be like any other G1 Climax show you've heard, because A, I want you to listen to it and not be like, oh, I'm done with the G1 Climax, I've already listened to 16 podcasts about it, which would be fair because there have been a million podcasts about it and it's been like a week and a half. So I'm trying to lure you all in with something a little different. So what I've got the guys here, two intelligent wrestling fans, as the Iron Sheik would say, two intelligent wrestling fans like Matt and Joey, who, along with me, have picked out what we consider the nine under-the-radar, forgotten-about great matches from the G1 that just you really need to check out if you've been blinded by the matches that have got all the headlines and all the hype, and rightly so because they've all been amazing. This tournament had nearly 100 matches, and so many of them were good, many of them were great, and a lot of them were sneaky good and surprised us. A lot of them were better than we were expecting. A lot of them just kind of got lost in the shuffle, and we've basically each picked out three matches that we most want to go to bat for, and we're going to discuss them all here and tell you why you need to go back and watch them, if not now, 3 months from now. Don't let these matches slip into obscurity. Go back, watch them, enjoy them. Don't just go back and watch the big matches, the final, all that kind of stuff, because those were great, but there's so much more to remember and enjoy from this G1. So guys, are you excited?
I am.
I can tell how excited you are from that response, Joey.
I'm so excited.
I actually am pretty excited. I took a little break after the end of the G1, as I normally do. I crammed so much into a short period of time to try and catch up in time for the finals that I haven't watched pretty much anything for about the last week and a half or so. So playing catch up on these three little underrated gems was pretty pleasant.
Yeah, it's something I always do enjoy with G1 is every year just going back and watching a couple of the matches and just outside the context of that, because it is such an overwhelming, all-consuming period of wrestling watching when if you try and keep up with the G1, that it's really different watching some of these matches outside of that sequence and outside of that bubble. In some cases, matches lose something by not being right there in the thick of the moment of the G1, and in other cases when removed from it you kind of get a even better sense of just how good a match is. So it's a real interesting, fun exercise to do, I think. So that is what we will encourage you to do, and hopefully we can sell you on these matches. So Matt, I'm gonna let you lead us off. Your first pick that you had.
My first pick that I had, and I think when you brought up this idea for the show to me, the first match that came to my mind, well, actually, you wouldn't let me do the first match that came to my mind. You said it didn't count as an underrated gem. So the second match that came to mind.
It got five stars thrown at it by notable people in the wrestling media, so I don't think it can count.
Fair enough. The fun thing about going on vacation in the middle of the G1 is you're kind of completely out of the loop on everything, so you're just watching as you go, and then you try and scroll back and see what people think like 4 days later. So I had no idea that everybody else was into that match as much as I was.
That match being Elgin Okada, for the record.
Yeah, that was great. Elgin was fantastic. I'm sure we'll talk about him as we go. My second choice for an underrated favorite, and the first one that you agreed was underrated, from July 23rd, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Yuji Nagata. It's just, Nagata hadn't won a match yet, and obviously wouldn't for a little bit going in, we know now in hindsight. Tanahashi was just starting to get his G1 on the go. He lost his first couple of matches and was really just starting to get going a little bit. Everything just from the immediate setup of, you know, you've got the G1 retiring ace in Nagata, former ace, against the aging, going into starting to see the sunset of his career ace Tanahashi, who's not quite ready to let go of that title yet. And they beat the hell out of each other for everybody who complains that Tanahashi is weak on his strikes and everything looks weak and he works really light, there was a slap match where they just slapped the fuck. Can I say the F word?
Oh, yeah.
Slapped the fuck out of each other. to the point where Tanahashi actually, like, busted open Nagata's eye. There's blood. You know, we got the great little spot that Nagata had going through most of his matches, where at some point somebody just shows him the point of disrespect. And you just see, like, the old man rage come into his eyes. And then he just proceeds to beat the hell out of them for a couple of minutes. And that hadn't – I got to admit, that got like a little by the end of it. You know, you see it nine times, it kind of loses its effect. But at this point, it was still good. And we got my always favorite, which is heelish Tanahashi. I would love to see him just go full-blown dick for a year or two. It would be great. But in the G1, you usually get two matches out of it where he just kind of reads the crowd and goes heel. And this was one of them, and it was great. The crowd was super into it. They definitely wanted Nagata to win. They were freaking out for him. And in the end, of course, he didn't pull it off. I thought the end kind of came a little bit fast, but overall, it was just a great match. I think I tweeted out at the end of it, like, this is why I love wrestling.
It is so many of the reasons why I love wrestling, too, were in this match. This is probably, for me, the match of the G1 that over-delivered to my expectations more than any other I can think of, because it's a pairing we've seen time and time again. It always delivers, but I mean, when you go through a G1 lineup at the outset and you look at all these fresh matches, Matt, you were on with me, we previewed, I would have to go back and listen, but I would bet a lot of money that a match we did not mention whatsoever in our preview was Yuji Nagata versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, because it's just not a glamorous matchup. It's two guys who've been in every G1 going back to probably 2001, I would say.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that's incredible. And obviously they're not in the same block every time, but certainly in the same block a lot of times. And it's just a match we've seen a lot. It's not one that's going to get a lot of headlines at the outset of the G1, so it wasn't even a marquee show. It was on this this venue in a Tokyo.
It was outside
venue.
Of Tokyo. Yeah.
It was in Tokyo. It was the Machida Gymnasium.
Machida Gymnasium, the Lyoto Machida Gymnasium, and this gym. And I'll come back to Tanahashi again in a sec. But this gymnasium is really, for me, starting to. It's going into next year's G1. I'm going to be looking to see what's on that card, because now 2 years in a row, I have loved the atmosphere of that show. It's got a real cool kind of atmosphere. You get the Tokyo fans in there, which are kind of some of the more hardcore fans. And it really has delivered now 2 years in a row. Last year, it had a great Okada Sanada match. It had a really good, of all matches, and think about this as something that sticks with me from last year's G1, but a Tama Tonga Tenzan match, which was really great last year.
Really good.
It had Fale versus Marufuji. It was another one. It was just a really good show last year. And then this year, it delivered in spades again. And I'm going to be talking about another match that was on this show. But, they certainly were up for this Nagata-Tanahashi match. And these two guys who were, in my opinion, they were the feud that started the revitalization of New Japan. New Japan was so dead in the water in 2005, 2006, like, you'd get some little things that would happen now and then that would be good, maybe sort of on the junior side of things. It was just a really dead promotion, and the feud between Nagata and Tanahashi in 2007 was the first big main event thing in years that had really clicked and really delivered for New Japan. And they built off that. Tanahashi built his whole huge ace run off of that. This was where he really kind of stepped up to the mantle as the leader of the company. And Nagata was a huge part in setting him up for that. So they have a lot of history, and they played off that. And this was one of their best matches they've ever had with each other. The intensity from both guys, the Tanahashi just giving Nagata nothing, just not caring about the fact that it was his last G1 and having no sentimental value. He just beat the guy down. And I think in reality, like, that's what it's presented as. But in reality, I think for Tanahashi, it was pretty clear that it was a huge deal for him to be having this match with Nagata on his last G1, because he did a lot more here than I think anyone would have expected of him. And Nagata was more than happy to meet him at that level, and they delivered a really special match.
Yeah, there was a big chop rope explorer spot that you don't normally see Tanahashi taking in one of the off nights. So
they built that up really well. I remember a great thing, great struggle on the top rope just prior to that move. But Joey, what did you take of this one?
I thought it was a great match, as I do all of every time these two guys get paired up against each other. This particular match reminded me a lot of their match from Osaka from like 2007. It was one of the IWGP, one of the feuds that you referenced earlier.
Yeah, they had the April. April was like kind of the match.
Like April 23rd or something like that. Yeah,
it was in Osaka. That's kind of talked about as the one of the best IWGP matches of all time leading up to this current era. I think I'm sure it's been surpassed plenty of times since, but prior to this era, it was talked about as the great championship match. And then they had a G1 final, and then they had another title match in October. But I think the April one's probably the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, that's that. With the crowd heat in this match, with like the Tokyo fans coming in, and just it was. Now that I'm looking at it, it was less than 15 minutes. It felt surprisingly longer when I was watching it, but like they packed a lot in for a 15-minute match, but it resembled that April 2007 match a lot to me. I love when these two guys get a chance to square off against each other. I'm hoping that it leads to maybe a Tanahashi defense against Nagata down the road, maybe even just at some spot show or a lower level pay-per-view. But you guys kind of ran the gamut on this one. It was awesome. Yeah.
Well, Joey, we'll let you lead off on the next one. Now, what was your first pick?
Number one for me was from day two of the G1 at Corican Hall. It was actually the first tournament match on the card, Juice Robinson versus Satoshi Kojima. I was super excited about seeing Juice at Corican going into this because of, if you guys remember, when they did the Corican, I guess it was in early July when they announced the contestants in the G1 this year, Juice got a huge pop, and that Tokyo crowd, he was beloved throughout the entire tournament, but especially at Corican, and him just coming out, beating Kojima, first match of the tournament on that specific card. It was an awesome moment. And I'll let you guys take it away.
It was interesting for me just that, as you mentioned, Juice was super popular when they made the announcements, and he was popular right the way through the tournament. But I did get a sense in this match that when the crowd had to choose between the two guys, they're like, yeah, Juice, you're cool. We're really getting on board with you. But fuck you, it's Kojima.
Yeah, but then he beat him, and the crowd just was like, this is like a real thing. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, the reaction was great for the win, because I don't think they expected I think they were really behind Kojima, and they expected Kojima to win, and they were gearing themselves up for the big Kojima being lariat and celebration, and then when it didn't happen and Juice got the win, that Pulp Friction hit and Kojima didn't kick out. They were, like you said, it was a real shock that reverberated around the building. And this was just a really good, hard-worked, well-laid-out, back-and-forth match, which took you on, there was a lot of good kind of twists and turns down the stretch. It took you on a nice little roller coaster ride, and they really established Juice as a credible player in this match, not just by winning, but in terms of how he hung with Kojima throughout the match, because late for pretty much the rest of the tournament, right up until I would say the Elgin match, which at that point was the end of the tournament, and he had, I guess, kind of recovered or what have you. But for the whole way through the tournament, Juice was selling his leg, and a lot of his matches were built around his leg getting worked over and him limping around and being in trouble. Here it was before that had started, so he was fresh. He was able to go toe-to-toe with Kojima right from the outset, and it was a different kind of Juice match than a lot of what he did at the tournament, and he looked really good doing it. He's not just a guy that needs to get by on just selling his ass off throughout a match. He can have a good, even back-and-forth contest, as he proved here.
Yeah, and I thought it was just a... Juice's whole run through the tournament was basically the exception that kind of proves the rule, which people give New Japan a bit of crap because they always kind of do the predictable thing, and they kind of keep it close to a real sports kind of feel for the way things build. And you would have expected, and I know my prediction was that, you know, Juice was going to run through and keep getting closer and closer to a win until the last night where he got the win and everybody would freak out in Sumo Hall and, you know, he'd have his big moment there. Instead, they give him the big moment when he's fresh. He gets this huge win over Kojima. He can't believe that he's won. The crowd freaks out because they have no idea that it's coming, because in New Japan, that almost never happens. So it's just a big surprise for everybody. And then Juice, you know, spends 2 weeks basically selling his knee, like you said, Alan, or his neck, you know, gets beat up in every match. But when he's fresh, he can beat anybody, but he's not quite ready to last that long haul of the G1 and, you know, keep himself healthy, like, you know, like a Tanahashi, or I guess Okada didn't this time around, but, you know, like some of the bigger names, he's not able to hold up to the wear and tear. So, you know, he's got the skill, he's got the talent, he's got the ability, but he's not quite got the experience in how to, like, pace himself and handle and work through injuries and everything. I just thought it was a really good story, you know, really good sports story. And Juice is, you know, gone from like, oh, that guy's in New Japan to being one of my favorite wrestlers. So I really enjoyed him throughout the entire thing. And it kicked off with this match.
Did you watch any of his post-match promos? Because they put up on New Japan World after every show, all the backstage promos. Juice's promos after all his matches so add to that story that you're talking about there, Matt. He really analyzes his progression and his standing and how he's doing. And he's like a real, like, kind of look in the mirror kind of thing. He's like, and like going into the Yano match, he's like, I gotta beat Yano. I know I'm not doing great on points. I've only got a couple wins, but I mean, I gotta beat Yano. It's if you're gonna be in this G1, if you gotta be able to go in there with a guy like Yano and be able to get to 2 points. His analysis is super strong of his performances. And then at the end, when he's beaten Elgin, it's really cool because he's just like, you know, I got 8 points in the G1. Yeah, no, I know I'm not in contention. I was out like 2 weeks ago, but I got 8 points in the G1 in my first G1. And I learned a lot. I mean, I have to be in consideration to be back in the G1 next year. So it was like, for him, it was like a team that, like, say, got promoted to the Premiership. Sorry for the soccer analogy here, guys. But it's like a championship team to get promoted to the Premiership. And in their first season, they don't come anywhere near, like, challenging for Champions League places or winning the league or anything like that, but they finished 12th out of 20, and they have a good, solid, respectable season. They avoid relegation trouble, and they have something to build off going into next year. That's really how they position Juice, and he got his big scalp along the way of Kenny, which obviously they're building up to his second major show main event of the year.
Yeah, that's crazy, actually. I didn't even think about his having main evented previously. Like, that's nuts, man.
Yeah, his progression just against Naito, and they will be doing it again with Kenny.
Yeah, and I can see, like, man, 2 years from now, I can see Juice, you know, being a legit semi-regular main event, kind of in the IC title picture kind of guy. The crowds are really into him in Japan, and his matches are getting better and better. So, and he's still probably, what, like 26, 27?
Yeah, he's young, and they definitely told the first chapter of a longer story in his match with Okada.
Oh, most definitely.
All right, so I guess it is time for my first pick, and I am going to go with towards the end of the tournament. You know, seen a lot at this point. Guys are tired. Us watching are tired. Getting ready for the big shows in Sumo Hall. Might be a very easy match for people to have glossed over, especially with two guys who are maybe not known for always having, in every spot, having the highest level of work ethic. But they busted their ass here, and they delivered one of my favorite matches of the G1, Togi Makabe and Tetsuya Naito. This match was fantastic. These two have, I believe, had 7 matches in the G1 together. They are always in the same block, it seems. They're always against each other. And they have phenomenal chemistry. Like, such great chemistry between these two guys. Every year in the G1, they tear it up. They built it up really well in the tag the night before, where they got into this big, wild pull-apart brawl. And then their match starts basically where they left off. They just went at each other with such ferocity and intensity that you don't always see out of Naito. But he was going after Makabe here. And Makabe's never once back down from a fight. They kept up this relentless pace throughout the match, built to a really great, hot back and forth finishing stretch. The crowd were into it. The crowd were with them. This thing just clicked, and was a hell of a match. If you weren't paying attention to it, if you skipped it altogether, please go back and watch this match and watch some of their other matches they've had in G1s, and see that this is a pairing that just works year on year. And yeah, I can't point to exactly why, but it does.
Well, I can't say that stood out to me. I can say that Makabe surprised me pretty much throughout the tournament, especially early on. But I had kind of written him off a little bit, and he came to like show some people that he's not dead yet.
But he kind of, in the middle of the tournament, he kind of the foot came off the pedal a little bit, or just there was more tread on the tires, or what have you, or some kind of car analogy. But he got some last legs there at the end, because this match, and then I think that was the second last match, and then his last match against Yoshihashi at Sumo Hall, coming out of that weekend, it got no talk because of how great the weekend was, but it wasn't a bad little match. They worked hard, and they got a good crowd reaction for their match. So Makabe, he left it all out there when it came to the end. He may have slowed down a little in the middle, but he did good at the end.
And he kicked it off really good with that good match against Fale too, which was just, you know, two big beasts beating the hell out of each other for a bit. But yeah, that sounds like one I'm going to have to go back and give a little more attention to when I rewatch.
Joey, are you in the same boat?
Yep. I can't remember it offhand. One of their matches in particular from the G1, like you were saying, they've squared off several times. This was before the LIJ rendition of Naito. It was, I believe, on the same show as that the legendary Shibata Ishii match from Osaka. That's the match I think of when I think of those two guys against each other, and they just beat the hell out of each other. So if it's anything like that, like you guys were saying, you're just kind of in a haze at this point. I think it was day 15 of the tournament, so you're just kind of blazing through the shows when you get a chance. But yeah, I can imagine these two just having beaten the crap out of each other.
Matt, your next pick.
My next pick. All right, so you know the saying that two wrongs don't make a right? Two things I don't like came together, and it was a short match. It was a quick match, but super, super fun. It was July 27th in Nagata, Sanada and Yano. I'm pretty – anybody who knows me knows I could do without ever seeing a Yano match again. And I have a lot of respect for Sanada, but I'm nowhere near as high on his long-term prospects as a lot of people. I don't know which one of you two just laughed there. I think somebody might agree with me.
That was Joey, but I do agree with you.
Okay. Maybe I'll just dive right into that then. I think so. The stereotypical complaint that a lot of people have made about Okada, particularly in pro wrestling Twitter, which I spend way too much of my time paying attention to. The complaint is, you know, he technically fine, does all the moves, really athletic, has no emotion whatsoever, and everything's really flat. I completely disagree with that with Okada, and that's my exact explanation for why I don't always like Sanada. I just, you know, he seems like a guy who's just doing things. Super athletic, has some cool looking stuff, but also has two of the worst, like one of the worst finishers possible in the skull end, though they're getting away from that, and has a move I hate more than anything in life, which is the Paradise Lock.
I hate that move. The Paradise Lock. I'm big Milano fan, so I enjoy Paradise Lock.
I like Milano, but I hate that move. And then so you mix that in with Yano, who's just so tired. Like I get the idea he's a change of pace, he's something you don't see in most of the other matches, and I really get the idea that, you know, the guys in the G1 probably really look forward to the Yano match in the middle and especially to the end of the tournament. And you're like, that's a night off. I've got four nights, you know, at least where I don't have to, like, you know, destroy myself. But he's painful to watch. But this match kind of brought those two things together. You know, yeah, Sanada was one step ahead of. Yeah, go ahead, Joey.
Oh, I don't want to step on your point. You go ahead. Because you might.
You go right ahead. That's fine.
So was the reason you liked this match? Because it was so short.
Not because it was so short, but the shortness and the speed that everything went with kind of worked. You know, Sanada was like a step ahead of everything Yano was doing. And for the first time when I'm watching Sanada, like that emotionalist thing was kind of coming across as like, I'm cool and don't give a shit about this idiot kind of vibe. So I got kind of a different feel at a Sanada. You know, he was one-upping Yano every way, and then leading up to the masking tape Paradise Lock, which, you know, it's not too often I laugh out loud when I'm watching wrestling. And that was one of the moments where I was laughing through the ending of that match. So, you know, if you're legitimately having a good belly laugh watching a match, how can it be bad? It was good. And then, you know, like if that's what Yano's going to do in a match, great.
The finish and then Sanada coolly walking back down the ramp.
Yeah, just so stepping over. He was so lackadaisical. He's just like, well, he's not getting out of this. I'm just gonna stroll on back to the ring. No rush.
The finish is, I'll be honest, more or less all I remember of the match, and it was great. And I remember popping huge, and then it was probably the Yano match I'll remember. This and the Suzuki match are the two Yano matches I'll remember most from the tournament. But just on the Sanada topic, I do think he has huge potential and can be a major star, but I don't think he's anywhere close to the sure thing that a lot of people seem to. I think there's a huge jump that needs to be made there in terms of the charisma and the personality that you mentioned, Matt, but it's not so much that I think he needs to change how he's acting or anything. I think it's more, it just needs to click in a way where, like it did here, this was kind of perfect in terms of that, like you said, cool, not caring, kind of emotionless guy. that has to transform itself from dry to being a positive character trait that people are into. In the same way that Naito's not caring Tranquillo character is, like, on the surface, if you were to describe that to a long-time wrestler or a long-time wrestling fan, it's like, oh yeah, this guy who doesn't care about anything and doesn't put over anything that happens around him. Be like, that's not money at all. That's terrible. But it works. He made it work. Sonata just needs to find a way to make, because I don't think he should try and be something he's not. And if you look at Sonata, whether it's Sonata with the goofy hair and the leather pants and the silly mask that he's coming out with now, or whether it's Sonata in blue trunks and white boots as a rookie in All Japan, he is the same very stoic, not very outward emotionally expressive kind of guy. That's just who he is. He shouldn't try to be something he's not. He shouldn't be doing fake smiles and high-fiving the crowd and all this and that. It's not him. So he should stick with who he is, but just find a way to capture that in a more enticing way for people to get into him. And it might just be about putting him with the right opponents and carefully crafting his feuds. And the latest Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, I was listening to it today, and Adam made a point that I was just like, he has nailed this here in terms of, this is exactly where Sonata is right now. He is 2003 to 2005 Hiroshi Tanahashi. All the look, the potential, the athleticism in the world, but just hasn't found himself, hasn't found who he is in terms of expressing who he is. And it did click for Tanahashi, and I mentioned earlier on the show a big reason that Tanahashi got to the level he did was the Nagata feud. He was in there with a guy that allowed him to figure out who he was. Because he had this guy who was a perfect contrast and a perfect foil. And Sonata is just, Gedo is going to need to find who the Nagatas are for Sonata. If he wants to make Sonata a main player, he needs to find out who the guys are who he can have an extended program with, where it just brings out the best of him. And maybe it is a Toriano. Maybe a Toriano mini feud is the kind of thing to get the ball rolling with, say, a Sonata. Maybe it's Minoru Suzuki, maybe it's someone else, I don't know. But
Naito.
Yeah.
Could be Naito feels more like an endgame kind of a feud. I think they need to build him towards that. They need to get him up and running before they can do the Naito program, because obviously that's a huge program if it ever does happen, with them being two big players in LIJ. He is, to me, one of the more interesting studies now in current New Japan, because so many of the guys in New Japan right now are, everything is just clicking, it's so perfect, and it's kind of like there's no mystery of where things will be in a couple of years. Like, it's like everything is on a clear upward trend in terms of most guys' careers and how they're progressing. Like, a guy like Hiromu, you've no doubts over. A guy like Kushida, you've no doubts over him just being established as this great ace in his division. Okada, you know where he is, etc. So Naito, Omega, all these guys. But Sonata is one that it could go in a few different ways, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they... I think he's one of Gedo's biggest challenges right now, and it's going to be a thing that we can really judge Gedo on in the next couple of years, is how he does with Sonata. So that is my long-winded Sonata rant, and I will just say, in terms of this G1, he was good. He had some very good performances, but I think he was probably a little bit better last year, and I think last year's G1 booking, I think, gave him a little bit more. I don't think he got a huge amount of progression from this year's G1, and I think losing to Tama Tonga at Sumo Hall was kind of the capper on that for me. I thought he really needed to win that match, and he didn't.
Yeah, I thought he was a big afterthought this year, because last year he had that the big opening win against Tanahashi, which is a really good match, and he had that really good match against Okada, and this year,
similar match with Okada this year.
Maybe because of the way I kind of consumed the G1 this year, which was long breaks and then try and get as much as I could in a short period of time. And that match didn't really stand out to me. I was actually, it's one of the matches I remember being like, oh, that wasn't as good as I'd hoped.
Okay. I don't think he got the big win over anyone. Who was his biggest win? Elgin?
Probably, yeah, because I think Elgin was set up really strong. So a win over Elgin is a big win for most guys, I think.
Elgin or maybe Evil. I think his wins were Elgin, Evil, Juice and Yano. I think those are his four wins. So I suppose
Evil was a big win in hindsight, but at the time it kind of seemed like, well, yeah, Sonata's going to have the better G1, so sure, he won.
Yeah, exactly. Joey, anything else on Sonata or this match in particular?
I love Toru Yano. I'm an outlier on that, so I'll take his little. His fire 10-minute matches. Yeah, I just think he connects well with the live crowds always, and I'm a big proponent of just having a good atmosphere and a good crowd, and if there's more participation, the better. Like for my enjoyment of a match. So, and then as far as Sonata, I'd have to go with you guys. There's something missing with him. He definitely has all the pieces to be great. Maybe he's lacking in charisma. I think he's just lazy. Same for Bushi, if I have to be honest. And I'm a big LIJ guy, as you guys know. But I think
Joey,
those guys
just burying the All Japan 2007 dojo.
Yeah, I mean,
well, there's a reason they couldn't cut it at the good dojo.
Yeah, I just I don't know. I always get excited to see those guys, and then they kind of to. A wet fart.
You're going to be shooting on Kai and Hiroshi Yamato next.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind with Kai.
Where
honestly.
Is Hiroshi Yamato? That's the guy who just disappeared. He was awesome. Was it?
I feel like I may be thinking of a different Yamato, but was he wearing like a white, just an all white outfit last time we saw him with like a? It almost looked like a diaper in All Japan.
I didn't see the diaper thing. But
it looked like a diaper, at least.
I remember wearing an all-white suit. He was definitely... White was definitely his color scheme. He was probably the biggest casualty of the Wrestle 1 All Japan split, because he just fell off face of the earth. Hell of a wrestler. Anyway.
Yeah.
Joey, what is your next match?
All right, well, I had a particular order, but... I guess to stay in line, since this match was on the same show as the Sonata-Yano match, I'm going to go with Okada versus Kojima from Niigata, Day 8. Same show as the Yano-Sonata match. And to go back to the point that Matt was making about comparing Sonata and Okada, gosh, Okada just showed so much just life and personality in this match. Kojima was right there with him, but you expect that kind of thing out of old man Kojima. He's got this awesome year-long title reign, and he's obviously been killing it. But then in this match, it seemed as though they went out there and they were like, all right, first and foremost, let's have a really good match, as they always do against each other, but also let's go have some fun since we're not the main event. And I just enjoyed this match so much. It was I was smiling at points, and then I was just like kind of like biting my fingernails at different points throughout the match. It was just up there with one of the most fun I had watching a G1 match this year. Hello.
Sorry, I'm here. I went moot by accident.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh no, I got dropped off the call.
No, I'm still here. My sound has gone all weird, but Yeah, the Okada Kojima match, I loved it.
Yeah, there's a that I think that was possibly like the sleeper show of the tournament with Elgin and Omega. This match, Tama Tonga and Juice was not that bad either, and I can't really remember Evil and Minoru Suzuki, but I'm sure it was great too.
Matt, do you want to go ahead on that one first?
Yeah. Yeah, so kind of the way that I enjoy Tanahashi kind of going heely on Nagata, we don't get to see full heel Okada anymore, really. You know, the fans have kind of taken a liking to him. So the chance, you know, when the crowd started to kind
of
turn on...
Understatement of the century. The fans have kind of taken a liking to Kazuchika Okada.
true. But, you know, the fans kind of started to turn and they wanted to see, you know, they wanted to see Kojima get a win. And Okada kind of obliged the fans and went kind of heelish on him. And it just, you know, brought the match to another level. And, you know, Kojima really lived up to being the, you know, the dad who can still go. Thought it was if it hadn't occurred to me, and I'm surprised I actually didn't get a chance to get a Kojima match on my list, because you guys know how much I enjoy Kojima. So I'm glad you brought that one up, because that was a really fun match, and it's one that kind of stood out throughout the tournament, actually.
Yeah, these two have always had great chemistry. We haven't got to see it enough. 2013 G1 in Sumo Hall, they tore it down. Title match they had against each other was great, and now it's been a few years since we've got to see them wrestle each other, and this was a match I was excited for, and it definitely delivered. It definitely gave me what I wanted out of it, and the added bonus of kind of those Okada heel flavorings which you talked about, Matt. It's a match I'm looking forward to rewatching for sure. It's one I had circled as it happened, as when I was like, oh, that was good. I want to go back and watch that again. Obviously, I can't right now because I've got another G1 to watch in like 6 hours. But it's a match. It was one of those ones where I was paying attention, but not like huge. Like, I was checking my phone occasionally. I was like not hugely enraptured in the match, and then the last few minutes I became that way, and I was like, oh, I wish I was like this for the whole match from the start, because I think I would have enjoyed it even more. Really good, and it was just great seeing the crowd get behind Kojima to that extent. Alright, I guess we're back to me. So this is number 6. Well, we've each had 2 at this point, I believe.
Yeah, yep. I've gone through 2.
Okay, I'm going to go with my next one as Yoshihashi versus Tetsuya Naito. I'm calling an audible on what my last match will be, guys, as I look through the list. I think I thought we had more matches of a certain guy than we did, so I hesitated against picking another one of those matches, but it doesn't seem to be, so I'm going to call it a little audible. But Yoshihashi and Naito... these two were in the New Japan Cup, I think last year was kind of one of the first matches of us seeing, holy shit, Yoshihashi has something in big matches. He really delivered big, and he went on to have a really good year. And they had a much longer match. That was Yoshihashi and Kenny had a really long match for the briefcase. But they, whenever Naito and Yoshi have interacted, it's been really good. They have great chemistry with each other in tags, singles, what have you. They got a chance to main event Korakuen Hall, and I knew it would be good, I knew the crowd would be into it, but as the match was about to start, on the same show, there had been a white hot Tenzan versus Goto versus Nagata match. There had been a incredible Zack versus Ibushi match. There had been Makabe and Ishii just battering each other and having a great, great bout that the crowd were going nuts for. And I want to say there was one other real good match on there.
It's Tanahashi and Fale.
Tanahashi and Fale was really, really good.
Making the count out matter again.
Yeah.
Indeed. See, those four matches, I was like, okay, Naito and Yoshihashi now following all that. It's going to be tough to top all that. And I think they came pretty darn close if they didn't achieve it. Because I had this right there with the Zack Ibushi match. 4.5 stars. I thought this was great. The thing I'll always remember from this match, I'll never forget this spot, was the endless submission tease in the butterfly lock of Yoshihashi. Where I think they basically have told the story with this move that it's like, it's not a great submission. Like, when guys get locked in it, they're not, no one's going to tap right away, but it's a hard one to get out of, and as you're in it just really long, it just gradually wears on you, and you're like, God, get this fucking guy off me. Now it's starting to hurt a little bit. At the start, you're like, oh, it's a stupid butterfly lock, get off me, this is a waste of time. And then, like, this one, it was maybe the longest hold he's ever done of the move. And Naito's selling was amazing. He was trying to turn different ways, frantically trying to get to the ropes as it went on. And he just kind of went into panic mode. It was almost like, I don't know, are you guys claustrophobic?
I have my moments.
Yeah, not so much here.
I'm the same. Just kind of have my moments. Minor claustrophobia. I can think of a recent example where I had to have an MRI and I had to be in the thing for like, I think it was probably about 13, 14 minutes. And I had had one a few years ago and I'd remembered kind of, I remembered a few years, done that one a few years ago, that I had to have my arms in a certain position over my head, that my shoulder ended up kind of getting really sore towards the end of it, and that kind of went into a bit of panic because of that. But on this one, I didn't have to have my shoulders like that. So it was all nice and relaxed. They put me in. I was like, ah, this isn't so bad. Just lying down, doing the breathing. It was like perfectly fine. It was grand. 5 minutes passed, 6 minutes passed. Probably somewhere around the 8 minute mark, I went from being completely relaxed and not in any uncomfortable position or anything to just going completely crazy. I'd be like, oh my god, oh my god, I need to get out of here, I need to get out of here, but I can't get out of here because if I stop this, we have to start over. Oh god, this is the worst thing ever. And those next 5-6 minutes felt like an eternity. They felt like they lasted forever. By the time I got out of that thing, my heart was racing, I could barely stand, and it was all, this is going off on a tangent, but it was all like mind, it was all my mind fucking with me. Here for Naito, it wasn't so much his mind fucking with him, but it was just the uncomfortableness of the hold kicked in at a certain point, and he went into sheer panic, and the crowd almost responded with it. They could see, Naito's struggling here, no one taps this move, but he's been in a long time. He might be about to tap. And he was scurrying towards the ropes.
Naito's selling of desperation and scurrying is so good, by the way.
Oh, it's top class. It really is. And he made the ropes, broke the hold, and the crowd were going crazy from that point forward. And Yoshi, he hit some of his big moves. He couldn't hit the karma, but hit everything else. And Naito had all the big kickouts, and then eventually the Destino put away Yoshihashi. It was a 20-plus minute match, I believe. They really gave these two time, and they killed it.
And if I could just be a jiu-jitsu nerd for just a minute, the butterfly lock is a choke. And they play it up like it's something else, but it's just a choke.
Is it because you're putting pressure on, like, the side of the neck? Is that the choke part?
No, anytime you get your chin driven down into your chest with a lot of weight on the back of your head like that, you can't breathe. It's a variation of, kind of like a playoff of Scarfhold, which Josh Barnett uses pretty well in no game competition. It's just a bit of a compression move.
Well, then let me ask a follow-up question since you buried it earlier and we didn't go into it. The Skull End. I, too, am a hater of the Skull End because pretty much everyone, with the exception of Juice Robinson, who did an incredible job bridging into the Skull End, so his whole head was underneath the arm of Sonata and it like looked like it was right around the choke or right around the throat. Everyone else in the
Skull End... It's on the forehead.
It's on the forehead, and it's like, How is this painful?
Unless you're cranking the neck or something, I don't really understand it either.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, last year at one of our G1 chats, we were complaining about the Skull End because it's a stupid-looking move. But I can find it again. I'm pretty sure I sent it to you already, Alan. It's a video of a guy actually tapping somebody out in jiu-jitsu.
I remember this. With the Skull End. Say it. Yeah.
Albeit not on a guy's forehead, but...
It's the Dragon Sleeper, like Tatsumi Fujinami did it, Tanahashi did it, Big Evil Undertaker did it for a short period, and
that man is the worst in the history of pro wrestling.
But did this match for you guys? Did coming off a great Cork and Hall show, or coming at the end of a great Cork and Hall show, was it able to? Deliver for you guys like it did for me?
Joey, I thought
you want to go first?
Yeah, sorry, I actually thought it was my favorite of on this particular card. And like you were saying, you got Goto Nagata, Ishii Makabe, Ibushi Sabre, and even Tanahashi and Fale. I thought this was the most captivating, and that may be because LIJ's big in Tokyo, especially, and Yoshihashi is pretty beloved in that building as well ever since he beat Omega last year in the G1. But it was a lot of fun. I hope they get the chance to square off, hopefully at Cork, and again, even in a tag. I get the feeling that these guys are friends outside of the ring, and Naito threw him a bone and was like, here, let's get you even more over in Cork. And
And I've got one question and one comment about this match. The comment being, and I'm sure this isn't an original thought, I think I'm stealing it from somebody, but Yoshihashi is one of those guys I'm never excited to see his match. It's never the match on a card I'm really looking forward to. But when was the last time he had a bad match? And most of his matches are actually, in hindsight, really good. He's just an under-the-radar guy who, you know, I think he's in his mid to late 30s now. He's probably never going to really get beyond where he is unless he has that weird late career story that somebody like ECE's had. But he's a stalwart part of the card, he's never like a detriment to a card. And then the question is, who has worst hair? Yoshihashi?
Oh man, I think Yoshihashi. I love Naito's mullet. it's so amazing. Whereas Yoshihashi, when he had that match against Omega after beating him, and I guess it was in September for Destruction, and he slicked it back, I thought it was like a completely different dude. The dude looked like such a badass in my opinion. But yeah, when it's all spiked up and just wacky and crazy and Japanese and stuff, I don't know. I'd have to go with Naito with the better hair there.
My pal Linus said the other day on Twitter, he's new to New Japan, he's watching all the G1 stuff, and a lot of his comments are about guys' fashion and stuff, and it's been pretty hilarious, but he made a great comment on Yoshihashi where he said, he looks like he has the hair of a man with a larger head, or he has a larger man's hair, or something like that. Like, that's exactly what it looks like. It's just, his hair doesn't fit his head at all. I thought I had You want to talk about sleeper matches and underrated, undercovered matches of the G1? I had the sleeper tweet of the G1 that didn't get near the coverage it should have. I was so disappointed. I thought I was going to get 100 retweets and 300 likes on this thing. It might have gotten like two. Yoshihashi and Tanahashi, when they wrestled, I said it was something like it was, this is your... a brawl has broken out in the hairdressing salon match of the G1. Or when things get feisty down at the hairdressers, I think that was it.
They've got very similar hair now that Tanahashi chopped a lot of it off. Now that you say that, if he just wanted to floof it up a little bit, like his,
oh, like, yeah, it would,
Mr. Hashi. Yeah.
Tanahashi's hair is quite plain at the moment. It would definitely need a dye job and some floofing.
Yeah.
This is the first time the word floofing has ever been used on a wrestling podcast.
Sorry, Alan.
Oh, no, don't apologize. I enjoy it. I'm going to try and work floofing into every show from now on.
I don't even know if it's a real term.
Vocabulary.
What was that, Matt?
You just need to floof up your vocabulary.
Yes, this is true. We can do with floofing a lot of things in our life. Vocabulary, hair, a cake. I think if you're making a cake, you'd want to floof the cake up a little bit.
Yeah, you floof it up a little bit.
Yeah. But, okay, get into our last pick each. Matt, do you want to lead us off?
Yeah, so August 4th, and this is, like, my favorite matchup. That these guys have great chemistry, and just I don't think a lot of people really look forward to these matches. But Fale and Ishii.
All right, everyone, had a few little bit of technical difficulties here, but we're back, and Matt is going to start over telling us about Tomohiro Ishii and Bad Luck Fale, the brute against the monster.
First off, is it Ishii or Ishii? It drives me nuts.
I say Ishii, but it's like I am acknowledging the extra I when I say that, if it makes sense.
I would rather just say Ishii, but I think it's Ishii.
I think you're right in saying that, as I studied a little bit of Japanese in college, and I believe it is Ishii, but as I'm telling you this, I'm staring at an autographed picture of Tomohiro Ishii. But it was printed, the 8x10 was printed by Ring of Honor, and they spelled his last name I-S-H-I. Whereas everywhere else it's I-S-H-I-I.
Well, so, would you say Hiroki Goto, or would you say Hirooki Goto?
I would say Hirooki Goto. Yeah. If you listen to the crowd's calling of like when they're chanting their names, it's always Ishii. It's not Ishii. That's only in like Western crowds, I guess. But
yeah, for Western crowds, it's let's go Ishii.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But
pronunciation aside, so it's August 4th. And it's, I don't know how much of my previous babbling got cut off or not, but this is my favorite mix of opponents in New Japan for chemistry-wise that I don't think anybody else gives a rat's ass about. I think these two mix really well together. It puts Ishii, or Ishii, however you want to go, into a role that he's not normally in, which is, you know, he becomes the plucky little underdog, and he gets a chance to live up to that the pit bull part of his moniker, because he just has to keep going and going and going. He's going to keep constantly getting beat down and beat down and beat down, and he keeps coming back and back and back. And that was the whole first part of this match, which it was built around Ishii trying to get a suplex. And, Fale just being, you know, for lack of a better term, too fat for him to get up. And probably about the first 7 or 8 minutes of the match is built around keep going back to the suplex, back to the suplex, back to the suplex. And when he finally hits it, the crowd's just like, ah, we're finally into this. This is great. And from that point on, like the match is kind of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's plodding up to this point. Is, you know, Fale is the big evil monster that the crowd really buys into, because the Japanese crowd, it sees like, you're a big motherfucker. If you hit me, that would hurt. So I think they just buy him. And, every time Ishii's, building up, one shot and down. Building up, one shot and down. Because Fale's a big motherfucker. And this is that kind of match where, you know, they'll never put the title on Fale. They'll never build the promotion around Fale. He's not going to be the kind of guy that they use to try and draw big main events all over the place. But every time in the G1, every time in the New Japan Cup, he's a guy that's going to get a couple of wins, and he's going to get a couple of big wins, and that's ended up being one of those. The match really picked up after the first Bad Luck Fall attempt. Ishii gets out of that one, and then they battle a little bit more, and then it's probably the best Bad Luck Fall. I don't know if it was the camera angle or just the fact that it's Ishii taking it, but the impact on this one was great. He just chucked him, and Ishii just landed flat, and it was brutal looking, and Fale got one of his bigger wins of the tournament.
I also have always been a fan of these two, and Ishii with even lesser big men like Doc Gallows, I think he was able to have some good matches with in the G1, but this really blew away my expectations in terms of just how, like, I thought it would be a fun match where they tell the story that you talked about, Matt, and it would be good and fun and in and out, get on with it, good stuff. But they built this into so much more than I thought. It was that story, but just fleshed out and made bigger, because they really took you on a ride in thinking Ishii could win here, and he got some huge near falls, and they really had him really putting the pressure on Fale, and Fale was selling like crazy for him, and it looked like this really felt like a main event match, but a huge back and forth towards the finish, and you really wanted Ishii to win. You thought he could win, and when Fale finally hit the Bad Luck Fall, it was real wind out of the sails moment, but it was great.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would have given this like a main event on one of the smaller shows. And like you said, it had that kind of feel to it. The build was great. It was structured really well. It was a fun match. And I think in our show where we did like what you're anticipating in the G1, this was one that stood out to me because their match last year was one of my favorites. And I wasn't disappointed this year.
Joey?
Yeah, I like this pairing specifically as well. I really love the way Fale takes suplexes from all the guys. Like that's a thing. Everybody can lift Fale up eventually, but the way Ishii sells like a vertical suplex on a guy like Fale, like the just having to power him up and have him being such a short guy, having that leverage to kind of get down and just kind of hinge his hips and lift the dude up. I can watch that just over and over and over again. And then just the, like you were saying, Matt, the story of him just knocking this big tree down throughout the match is a lot of fun, and Ishii just does it so well. I also think the way he escapes the Bad Luck Fall every time they wrestle, the way he kind of like squirms, it's different than other guys where they kind of just throw the back elbow into the side of Fale's head. Ishii kind of like squirms, and that's something you don't really see out of Ishii. You don't see him in that predicament that often, but that in particular, I am in 100% agreeance with you that these guys should get a main event spot at, like maybe next year, or if Ishii gets the NEVER title again, or any title, honestly, just give them a main event somewhere. I think they could knock it out of the park.
Or Fale gets like the IC title again.
Yeah. Oh, as a side note, our buddy Alex from our Japan trip last year. I got to hang out with him again this past June when I went back to Japan. He actually designed the Daryl T-shirt for Fale that he put up on PWTs.
Oh, awesome!
So go buy it just to. Everybody that's listening, just to support a really cool dude.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
The whole Fale Daryl thing was just a beautiful addition to this G1. A terrible, horrible addition to this G1. Yeah.
So if Daryl didn't have 9 lives and come back afterwards, it would have been a great little bit to it. But I have a feeling they're going to beat that one into the ground.
Joey, you want to hit us with your last match?
Sure. Alrighty. So,
actually, you know what, Joey? Both to save your voice because you just talked, and because I want to end on your match because I think it's a suitable match to end on for a couple of reasons.
Right on.
I'll go with mine first. I don't think there's as much to say about mine as there is about yours, but it was a real fun one for me from a show I mentioned earlier, the Nagata Tanahashi show in that Lyoto Machida gym. On the undercard, I think it was the first match after Intermission, the first G1 match on the show, it was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Yoshihashi, and this was probably one of the greatest Zack torturing a dude with submissions matches you've ever seen, to the point where he was just schooling Yoshihashi so much in this match that there was not a doubt in my mind that Yoshihashi wasn't winning this, because I was like, he has just been schooled so much, he's obviously winning. He's obviously making the comeback here, and Zach's winning. He made a little comeback, Zach totally snuffed him out, and then Zach tortured the fuck out of him to get a submission win. It sounds like a silly match, a stupid match, but it was so brilliantly done, and it was so perfect for Yoshihashi, who is a guy who kind of gets by on heart and guts and determination. I think that's his character. So when he was in there with this ruthless technical assassin, it was like he just got essentially snuffed out. It was unbelievable to watch. It was a really cool story. It made Zach look like a killer. And I think now's a good time to mention again with those post-match promos. Zach's are obviously, I'm sure some of the Japanese guys are great in terms of what they're saying, but from judging just the English ones, I mentioned Juice earlier as being great. Zach is probably right there with him as the best of the English-speaking guys in terms of these promos and what they did for their journey through to G1. But Zach has won near the end. I can't remember if it's after the Sumo Hall Ishii match or the tag match on final night. But he was all fired up, really, really fired up, and talking about dickheads who said he should be a junior heavyweight, and he basically, what did he say? He's like, I'm a heavyweight, mate. I may not weigh as much as the heavyweights, but I've got the heavyweight weapons or something like that, or I've got the heavyweight artillery, and I just proved it, and I've proved it all month long. I've got the weapons, I'm a heavyweight. And it was so cool. I was so fired up after seeing this. Zach, Yoshi's not exactly the biggest heavyweight in the world, but he went in there with other guys, and he stood there with them like Fale, and he beat Fale. But here with Yoshihashi, he showed that he is no pushover. He is not going to get swallowed up in a New Japan heavyweight division. He is a player, and he is a guy to be watched out for.
Yeah, so I think I was the exact target audience for what they were trying to get across in this match. While we were having our technical difficulties, I was saying to you, Alan, I for the longest time, I kind of lumped Zach into the quote unquote grapple fuck guys that were taking over Evolve for a little while. And by no means am I an expert, but I spend my spare time getting beat up by my friends doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And if you do legit grappling, a lot of times the quote unquote grapple fuck can be really hard to watch because it's quite clear that, you know, it's like my move, your move kind of stuff. And it doesn't look that great. And I lumped Zach into that. And this tournament really sold me that I was completely wrong on Zach. You know, he's cocky, and because he's cocky, he doesn't go for the simple thing. He goes for the flashy thing. And he's good enough that sometimes the flashy thing works. And in a match against a guy like Yoshihashi, you put it perfectly. Yoshihashi's a guy who gets by on heart. And the guy who gets by on heart does not get tortured and submitted by a chump. And Zack Sabre is not a chump because he tortured and submitted a guy like Yoshihashi, who's built up that kind of reputation with the crowd. And if this G1 did nothing else, and it did a whole bunch of other things, but it definitely got over Zack as a threat against anybody in the heavyweight division. And, you know, his upcoming Intercontinental title match against Tanahashi is one I'm really looking forward to now.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Going to be so good.
Yeah.
Before we get to Joey and the last match, I'm going to interrupt a breaking news, which won't be news to anyone listening, but I'm hoping it might be news to... I always enjoy breaking news to guests on my show and hearing their reactions. Are either of you guys on the internet at the moment and seeing things that are happening?
Is this in terms of...
Something. Is it not wrestling related?
This is an MMA story.
Okay, yeah.
I saw the same thing.
When I went, yeah.
John Jones fails his steroid test and Cormier is the champ again. What a fucking joke.
It's Dick Pills.
Is a loser.
It's the Dick Pills. My fiance is a huge fan of John Jones. She loves him for whatever reason. I've questioned her motives there because I don't understand how anybody could like him. But when we were having the audio snafu, I went out and got another water, and she was like, dude, John Jones got stripped of the belt. And I was like, well, that's not very surprising because he's a piece of trash, man. Sorry.
So when you say water, do you mean like American beer is water, or did you get actual water?
No, it's a bush. It's a bush. It was, that's basically water, right?
Agreed. I'm sitting here drinking my Grim Ross American Pale Ale, Maritime Pale Ale, not American.
Nice. Yeah, no, I got 16 fluid ounces of Busch beer brewed in the USA.
It's well, piss if water. You ever want to come to the Maritimes, I'll hook you up with some tasty beer.
I might have to take you up on that sometime.
And Alan, I'll just feed you good pizza.
Sounds like yeah. a plan.
And vanilla yogurt.
Like, and a donaire. I will get you a proper donaire.
Or not yogurt, pudding, sorry.
White pudding.
I'm a fan of the yogurt, too. I've got no problem with that.
Yeah, same here.
Joey, what's our last match?
All right, to stay on the trend of Zack Sabre Jr. matches, let's close it out right, considering it was... this man,
back to back, Zach to Zach.
Yeah, Zach to Zach. Yes, he was one participant in this match, and the other, it was one of his last G1 matches ever. Unfortunately, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Yuji Nagata from day 15 in Hamamatsu on August 6th. On paper, these guys match up pretty great, in my opinion, and then. In actuality, they matched up perfectly as well. And I can't say enough good things about this match. I hope they get to square off again in some form someday, but and maybe in a more noteworthy show, as this one was kind of in that right before the final 3 days lull kind of deal between the Osaka show and Sumo Hall. But, man, these guys went out there. I think it was the first tournament match of the show, and they just had what I would consider a technical classic. What would you guys think?
Yeah, I'm in the exact same boat. Earlier I was saying, I kind of figured Juice was going to lose everything and get to the end and have the big win. I figured the G1 was set up for Nagata to lose everything to get, you know, the big final win against Fale on the last night.
Yeah, so, his student.
Exactly. So I was positive that Zach was going to get the big win there. And slightly anticlimactic for Nagata to get the win in the overall story, maybe. But another one of those things where, you know, we're just going to tweak what you expect just a little bit to surprise you with something that makes sense. And, you know, like you said, it was a technical classic. It worked out great, and Nagata got the big win, and I really enjoyed this match.
I think, like, going back to Alan's point at the beginning of the show about matches that you kind of watch in a vacuum, kind of out of the context of the tournament. I think this is a specific match that will do wonders for that scenario. I think if you're out of the G1, just like just blazing through the entire tournament, doing a lot of catch up, like Matt, you said you were doing, and like myself, if you just, you know, sitting around on a Saturday morning, just have nothing really to do, and you throw on this match, it's going to be awesome. And it was awesome in real time, and then in that scenario, I guess. But yeah.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the crowd being so into Nagata that they, you know, they amped his matches up a level or two beyond what they would be with a, you know, with a quieter crowd. Because the crowd, like this entire tournament, just loved Nagata. And this was one of those matches that it really stood out where, you know, just if you're kind of watching with half an eye, or if you're not, you know, like I said, I had to consume mass amounts of the G1 at once. But the crowd response in this match is one of those things that just kind of perks you up a little bit, and you pay a little bit more attention, and then you get sucked into it too. And that's the kind of thing that'll hold up over time. Because you go back and watch this out of context in a year or 2 years or 3 years, you're going to be like, wow, this match is great.
Yeah.
I fucking loved this match. this, for anyone that knows me, would know this is like a dream match for me that I would have had for years. Nagata, one of my all-time favorites. Zach, one of my current favorites, becoming one of my all-time favorites. Two guys who have a lot of similarities in terms of how they approach wrestling and the way they wrestle. Very no-nonsense, very... it's about what happens inside the ring, essentially. That's the best way to put it. And, yeah, they killed it here. I got to plug in a battery very quickly, or this is going to die. 2 seconds.
We're just full of technical snafus on this.
That's a DKP. That's the way it goes.
We'll see how much gets edited out when it gets put up on the site.
I hope none of it does.
And since Alan's not listening right now, we'll see if the chair ends up as an Easter egg at the end.
Drama to end the show there. Last gasp battery plug in. All right. So as I was on a roll there, two guys who it's all about what happens in the ring, and they take their wrestling seriously, and they love wrestling, they love the sport of wrestling, and I can guarantee you, Zack Sabre Jr. loves Yuji Nagata, and has been a fan for a long time, and it's something that just stuck out to me, I don't know why, but I remember when Devitt went to WWE, he got some tweet from, like, he was getting all tweets from different people in New Japan wishing him well, etc., etc. And when Nagata tweeted it at him, Devitt's response to Nagata, knowing kind of the role Nagata takes in the company in terms of nurturing guys and bringing guys along and this and that, and Devitt said, I can't remember, did he use Zach's real name or if he just said Zach or whatever it was, but he basically said, take care. He said, thank you, Nagata-san. Please take care of Zach or Zach's real name. Something like that. And it was years before Zach ever even went to New Japan. He had been in Noah, and Nagata had probably crossed paths with him in Noah. But I think Devitt, knowing how much those two would kind of click as wrestlers, I think that was something he was probably, I don't know if it was something they had talked about or discussed or whatever they were, or Nagata had expressed to him that he was a big fan of Zach and wanted him to be in New Japan or something. So something that was always in my mind is a reason why Zach would eventually end up in New Japan. So seeing these two have this match against each other, I was like, okay, here we go now. Let's see these two create something special. And so often the G1, and it's cool, it's a good part of it, it's something that it helps the flow of the tournament. You kind of see patterns develop and matches play off each other and this and that. This match was completely out of pattern with everything else these two guys did. They just got on the mat and they tested each other a lot of the match. It was real good submission grappling, submission wrestling, and then eventually Nagata finally picked up his big win, and it was tremendous. It was a great moment. It was unexpected because I think people thought it would go down to the last show in Sumo Hall where he'd maybe get his win, but it happened early and it didn't hurt the enjoyment of it or the reaction of it at all. So this was great, and this is if you are a fan of submission wrestling and mat wrestling, this is probably a match, if you didn't see in the G1, that you need to see ASAP.
Agreed.
So there we are, guys. 9 matches, an eclectic group of matches that I think people would enjoy going back and watching. If not now, when you finish listening to this, then maybe at Christmas time, at some point down the line, go back, watch these matches. I think outside of the context of the G1, it's going to really, a lot of these will really stand even taller than they did at the time. So that is that. This was a free show. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope everyone checks out the other offerings we have here at F4WOnline.com, WrestlingObserver.com, and dip into the archives while you're here, and check out some of the other free shows and become a member, and then check out everything in the archives, from all my old shows to all the old Observer radios, all the past Figure 4 dailies, Brian and Vinny shows, etc., etc., and all the other good radio shows, guys like Adam and Mike, we mentioned, Carl Stern, Josh Nason, if you like the MMA side of things, and we got, of course, the F4W newsletter that I write for every week, Talking Japan, and the historic classic Wrestling Observer newsletter every Wednesday night, going up there on the website, and probably a bunch of other stuff I'm not thinking of, but yeah, explore the website, sign up, check it all out, and enjoy it. And Joey and Matt, I'd like to thank you both. Matt, do you have any plugs out there for people that aren't for the Irish Tourism Board?
You can follow along me being cranky on wrestling Twitter at shining_wiz13.
You've been quiet recently. There hasn't been too much to see there.
Yeah, you could say I got a little heated last week, but I've been calm this week.
Are you talking about that new Dragon Gate show, Open the Heat Gate?
Yeah, my favorite show of the year. And every once in a while, when I get the time and I get the inspiration, I'll write something up for the Voices of Wrestling guys. But there's tons of great, intelligent writing and reviews going on over there, so check them out as well.
And Joey.
Yeah, I don't produce anything other than a couple just happy tweets every now and then. So go and follow me.
That's why we love you, Joey.
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter. I'm Joey Bay. You'll find me. And if I had to plug anything, I'll plug Glory Pro Wrestling, because that's my hometown promotion now. Big Mike Elgin runs it, and I've been to every show since they started, and it's a lot of fun. He's booking a lot of awesome talent from all over the world. So yeah, check Glory Pro out. Buy a show.
Awesome. That will do it then. Everyone, thank you for listening, guys. Thanks for joining me, and we'll be back very soon on the DKP. So until then, bye everyone. Don't break me.
みんなに稼ぎ欲しいのは本当にそれだけ。そんなもんは後からついてくるだろう。何がしたくてどこへ行きたいか、それが重要。お前らしさ見失うな、諦めたら終了。この心の片隅にしまう夢がある。それは
Yay! We're recording.
Hooray!
Wonderful.
Oh, you got one of those curved TVs, too. That's a nice little setup.
It's pretty sweet.
I bet that chair's pretty comfy, though.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I drove for 8 hours, got it, and then sat in it, and ended up falling asleep.
As you do.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Was there another reason why you drove 8 hours for a specific chair, or was this just you had to have this chair?
We ordered this chair like 2.5 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's been sitting at a furniture shop in a city 4 hours away for about a month. And Saturday was the first day. It was like, all right, I can finally go do this.
That begs the question to me, Matt. Is there no furniture shops within 4 hours of you?
Oh, there definitely is, but they don't have that chair.
Had you sat in this chair previously that made you know this was the chair for you? Because, like, I'd want to know this was definitely the chair for me if I was going to commit that level of a drive to it.
All right, so Liz had ordered a table from this place, and it's only an hour away from the city that we used to live in. So we've been up to visit a couple times, so we've detoured once or twice. So we detoured to get that table, and the lady who owns the furniture shop was talking to Liz and just basically looked at me. She's like, you just sit down. Sit in that chair right there. Like, yes, ma'am. And I sat down in the chair, and I was like, this is the most comfortable chair I've ever sat in. And I told Liz, I'm like, you've got to sit in this. And the lady who owned the store got this big smile on her face. I'm like, you did that on purpose, didn't you? She's like, I'm good at my job. So she sold me a chair.
Goddamn. It's a magical right chair.
On, it's not. If you go into Twitter, there's a couple of pictures I just sent Joey that you can see there.
Okay.
With Donald Trump in the background.
Oh, wow. That chair looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. So it's like all leather, except the back part's like this gray felt.
Oh, man.
And it smells like awesome leather.
I'm going to show that to Sarah, Matt, because that's really similar to the setup we have in our mind for what our living room's going to look like.
Oh, nice.
We're getting a very similar couch to that. We're thinking of positioning it in the exact... The only difference is on the wall that couch is beside, that's where our front is, so like the window is there. But yeah, the TV would be on the other side, and yeah, I like how it looks. It looks like the distance from the TV to the wall where the TV is, I think that's going to be the exact distance we have.
Nice.
You got to sit as close as possible to the TV without feeling like a weirdo.
Yeah.
At least I do. I like sit right in front of my TV like I'm a 5-year-old still. So my vision is rapidly decreasing and degrading. So
yeah, mine's already shit. It can't get that much worse. All right, guys. This has been recording, but we'll take a gap so I know where to start the intro.
You don't think people want to hear all about my chair?
Hey, I'll put this in as an Easter egg at the end if you're cool with that. I don't want your private life being thrown out there to the masses so they can judge you for your chair buying habits.
You can go right ahead and throw that as an Easter egg on the end. I'll survive.
Wonderful.
Though you never know, Bix might start making fun of me for my chair choices. Who knows?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, don't get us in trouble here.
Shots fired.
That part you can edit out.
Look at you making me do all this work. All right. We'll take a pause